I think a lot of the reason they're inciting this stuff is because they want to clamp down on our free speech. Good Morning Britain for the last 2 days has covered this. Should social media be banned? And when they say social media, of course they mean X or Twitter, because this is the only platform we have left where we have free speech, as in social media. We've got Rumble for video, but in terms of social media, Twitter's the only one. They want to cancel it because they don't want any dissent. They control Facebook, they control Google, they control YouTube, they don't yet control Elon Musk. And so this is why they're coming for him.
He's come out on our side.
Thankfully.
Absolutely come out on our side, because he's come out and started saying two-tier Keir. And he's smart. And then you get Ed Davey criticising Elon Musk. I'm like, Ed, you don't even know what a woman is.
I know.
This man is building space rockets to Mars,
yeah.
Tunnels under LA, and he's got time to shitpost on Twitter. Welcome to another episode of Fox and Father, with me, the Fox, and him,
the Father.
This is a show usually where Calvin tutors me in the ways of righteousness, and it may be our last show before the summer, but we've just had a plan that we may do one while we're away in Greece.
We're going to do Fox and Father on tour.
Fox and Father on tour. And then someone suggested the other day we should do Fox and Father on tour in, like, around little cities.
That would be lovely, wouldn't it? Especially outside of here, because this may very well be our last one in London.
Mm.
It's definitely the last one in this studio anyway.
Mm.
Times are changing.
Times, they are changing, baby. anyway, what a week.
Oh.
What an unbelievable...
Awful.
What an unbelievable week. But
the grown-ups are in charge now, so everything's good.
The grown-ups. What... the lying bastards. Let's start off with how are you doing, Calvin?
I've had a good month. Being in Cambridge was wonderful. I'm now in Oxford. I'm nomadic, so they can't track me down.
I thought they were going to track you down at some point.
Mate, coming back into London is... I'm not happy about it. This is the last time I'm here. I'm not coming back here.
It's an assault on the ears, isn't it?
On all the senses.
Mm.
It's dirty, it's horrible, it's too busy, but it's no longer British.
Yeah, but Sadiq Khan says it's the greatest city on earth.
It was. It was, until he got his grubby hands on it.
Until he got his dirty little...
Yeah, I'm good, until I come back here. How are you? Oh, in fact, on the way in, I had the only black cab driver who's not sound. You know, I love black cabbies, as you know. I was like, he said, how are you? I was like, well, I'm all right, until I came back here. He's like, oh, London's great, it's very multicultural. And I'm like, that's the problem. Anyway.
That multicultural thing is a bit of a bother. Okay, so we've got a lot to go over.
How are you?
I am very good. I hate being tarnished with all these horrible terms by our enemies who like to attack and smear and cancel.
Mm.
I hate that, but I don't live near any of them anymore.
Yeah.
So same old, out in the morning, 90-minute walk, 2-hour walk, talk through things with the missus, go back home, do some hard labour of some kind, you know, and then and live a very... simple and peaceful life. Do a bit of writing. I've been writing some more. I'm going to do some more. And I'm going to see my kids. And we're all going to go away to our favourite place. So
we are
super excited about that. So I'm on good. I'm on sort of demob happy, shutting down for summer vibes, which will be good. But let's get going.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm just thinking how much we've got to cover.
Well, so let's start at the beginning.
Yeah, it's always a good place to start, isn't it? Right.
That's a classic. But, I mean, the beginning isn't actually last week. The beginning isn't that very, very horrible, unfortunate killing of three innocent young girls. The beginning is 1997. The beginning is Tony Blair opening our borders systematically and saying that anyone who opposes this is racist. And repeating that lie constantly throughout his whole tenure... throughout the whole of the Labour tenure until the Conservatives and the Lib Dems took office in 2010 and continued because they wanted to get rid of the reputation of being the nasty party. So they wanted to be nice. And so they continued with Tony Blair's legacy, but also because they had no ideas of their own. And so they kept the borders open, in fact, opened them even wider, opened the gates to the barbarians. And so we find ourselves in a, very messy situation that has been instigated by successive Labour and Conservative governments importing people who hate us, hate our way of life, hate our ideology, hate our faith, hate our culture, and essentially want to take it over.
It's a pretty fair summation of where we find ourselves in. And then what happens is this tragic massacre takes place. We still don't know enough about who did it. I mean, there is an irony, a horrible and tragic irony, that the rioting that's ensued has brought around 24-hour courts and people are getting released from prison. Murderers are getting released from prison to house these people. And yet the families of these three young girls and the 11 seriously wounded are going to have to wait till January for justice for their families. So that just goes to show how where Tutia Keir's priorities lie. So we have that. We then are not told. Rumours like they do on the internet spread around.
Yep.
We're all guilty occasionally of getting these things wrong.
Yep.
And the rumours were, and also none of these have been discounted yet. We don't know what this person's motivation was. We don't know anything about him, really.
That's part of the problem.
Yeah, it is part of the problem. So it's absolutely understandable that British people would turn around and go, well, when was the last time people started? Who were the last group of people that started massacring people?
Who is he? Where is he from? What's his motivation? Very simple, straightforward questions that people deserve answers to.
Yeah.
But they sweep it all under the rug because they're so afraid of race riots. They want to put diversity above everything else. So, of course, they're not going to tell us who he is, where he's from, or what his motivation is. But they never do. We never, ever find out the manifestos of these killers. And that's why people are speculating. And then the people who are speculating get the blame. And so the government and the mainstream media will talk about anything except who it is, why he did it, and where he's from.
Which has got, and I think we've reached a sort of boiling point with that. So it very quickly stopped being about these three girls, led on by people like Majid Nawaz, whose sort of importance in the world has dwindled for whatever reason. No one really cares what he says anymore, which is a shame because I used to like Majid before he started calling me a neo-fascist globalist patsy.
Yes.
I was like, well, hang on, where do I get my neo-fascist globalist patsy cash from?
No, Majid's an interesting one because he was very good throughout COVID and he fought the good fight for freedom, but he seems to have lost the plot because he's lost his relevance. Yeah, he called you out. He called you a neo-fascist globalist patsy. And I was like, wait a minute. Nothing you've said was incorrect in that saying Britain should be free of Islam. Of course it should. It's contradictory to our way of life.
Yeah.
But I think what he means, well, I don't know what he means, but Islam is the globalist agenda. Replacing Christianity and British values with one world order, one world government, one world religion is the globalist order. So actually he is the globalist, and he called me a globalist shill for supporting you, but he is actually the globalist shill by supporting Islam. But it's interesting that, you know, he wrote his book from radical extremist to what was it, to secular, there's no secular Islam. And it just goes to show, when it comes down to it, when push comes to shove, he puts Islam above Britain. And they always do. This is the problem. It's where are your loyalties? Where are your allegiances? And for a Mohammedan, it's Mohammed over Harry and St. George.
Yeah. I think it was a very stupid decision for what the government did, to not tell anybody what happened. And I think it was even worse then, as the boiling boilerplate of anger about, you know, the fact that we're outraged and nothing changes, outraged and nothing happened after massacre after massacre after massacre. It's interesting that people immediately jumped to the conclusion it was an Islamist, and we still don't know what the motivations of this person were, and I won't speculate on that. But now, that was then preceded.
But before going on, because other people were speculating, other people were saying, actually, he's a Christian, actually, he's Welsh, actually, this, that, and the other. It's like, well, let's have the full information. Is he Welsh? He doesn't look Welsh from what I've seen of him. It turns out maybe his parents are from Rwanda and that he came over, he's second generation. We don't know if he was born here. We don't know if his parents came up. We don't know the ins and outs, but both sides are speculating to try and prove the other side wrong. So let's just have it all out there. Let's get the information.
But only one side has won the narrative, which is to make it completely not about another set of massacred children on British soil by someone who doesn't seem, you know.
Was he a Christian? Was he a recent convert to Christianity? Was he a Mohammedan? Was he a recent convert to Mohammedanism? We don't know.
Well, he's a sweet little autistic boy like Doctor Who.
But that's the problem, isn't it?
That's what the media are telling us. That's what I'm so disgusted and appalled by. You didn't, the minute the media released that first picture of a baby boy's face, it's like, how could you see that as a monster?
Yeah, he is not the monster. He is the victim in all of this.
My views on the media, my disdain for the media was already like gutter levels. Yeah. And now it's gone beneath the streets into the sewer level.
Yeah. Someone murders three innocent British babies and seriously injures 11 more. They should be painted as the enemy, not the victim. And for the media to flip it upside down shows that the media is not on our side. It's not on the side of the British people, not on the side of the victims, painting the perpetrator as the victim. That's wicked.
The lying, dying media in collusion with the government. As we found out, as I've said frequently on this, in conversation with you and in conversation with others, Keir Starmer was just pretending to be a nice guy, pretending to be a grown-up. He's a radical authoritarian leftist.
They will call evil good. This is scriptural times we're living through, where the world is getting flipped inside out and upside down. And so we have to maintain our sanity through sticking to the truth.
Yeah. Okay. And on that note, I want to play Keir's speech.
I utterly condemn the far-right thuggery we've seen this weekend. Be in no doubt, those that have participated in this violence will face the full force of the law. The police will be making arrests. Individuals will be held on remand. Charges will follow and convictions will follow. I guarantee you will regret taking part in this disorder, whether directly or those whipping up this action online and then running away themselves.
That's him threatening.
Yeah, there's two threats in there.
Yeah, what? Tell me about
the threat. So the first one, he's threatening the British people by calling them far right. The people who are upset, frustrated, angry, with righteous anger. And you and I and other people have said, you know, be angry, but don't be violent all along. But people have a right to be angry. So he's threatening them by calling them far right, by calling the upset people the perpetrators. And then the other threat is to the people online. He's essentially saying to you, to Tommy Robinson, Carl Benjamin, Nigel Farage, anyone who's having a conversation about this, commentating on this, he's saying you guys are the problem.
And for me, just to compare that to his speech about BLM, the riots in 2020, during apparently the world's most dangerous pandemic.
Yeah, you have a right to protest. You should be angry. Soft.
And then to go into a Cobra meeting, come out and say there is no two-tier policing.
Yeah.
And then last night, to see the head of whatever police force it was. Let me have a look. I think it was
Mark Rowell who pulled the mic off someone when they said, is there two-tier policing? And he pulled the microphone off them and stormed off.
Are we going to end two-tier policing, sir?
A member of the public did that. That's criminal damage, whatever. But anyway, then you get the head of the West Yorkshire. You get the head of West Midlands Police.
Why was there such a low key, shall we say, police presence? Because I mean, clearly your officers were there, but they were not visible, and yet there were an awful lot of people out and an awful lot of people who were armed with various weapons.
So we have really strong business and community relations. And because we were aware through intelligence that there was a potential protest through that misinformation yesterday, we had the opportunity to meet with community leaders, with business leaders, prior to that event to kind of understand the style of policing that we needed to deliver during the course of that operation. So we knew that there was going to be a large amount of people out on that counter-protest. We knew who the vast majority of those people were. We'd had conversations in terms of what that was likely to look like, and so our policing response was commensurate to that intelligence and the information that we'd held with our partners and communities prior to that event taking place.
Even given there were so many of them clearly armed, I mean, would you do the same if it was an EDL type situation?
So we've policed in response to the intelligence that we received at that moment in time. What I would say is that the vast majority of people that attended that protest yesterday did so law-abidingly, and they did it with the right intentions. There were just a small minority of people that attended there and were intent on causing either criminality, disorder, or fear within our communities. what we saw was a response from our communities where they were trying to kind of make sure that that was policed within themselves as well, and trying to deter people from taking part in that disorder. And as a result, we've been able to go on, gather that evidence, gather that information. We have made arrests. Well, we've made an arrest this afternoon. We continue to try and make arrests in terms of those people that were involved in those disorders yesterday.
So having denied two-tier policing exists, mm-hmm. we have a man explain to us two-tier policing.
Yeah. They meet with their partners, their community leaders. First of all, who is the community leader? How do you get elected as a leader of a community? Who selects these leaders and who puts them in charge? Who says you're allowed to police your own community? You are allowed to tell us how to help police you. That's not what the police is supposed to be.
It's not policing without fear or favour. It's policing with preference and precedent.
And the way they go on about these largely peaceful protests, he's alluding to it, but of course Sky News use those exact words, largely peaceful. When they're out there with machetes, planks of wood, they're beating people up, they're destroying cars and pubs, they're a violent mob. Well, because they're Mohammedan, it's okay.
We've got to be fair and say that there are violent British mobs, and we should condemn that utterly.
Condemn all violence. But the problem is they don't. They only condemn one side.
They don't. And then they say that we're the ones inciting violence. You've got newspapers saying that Tommy Robinson's inciting violence. He's never done any such thing. They're saying I'm inciting violence. By saying that Islam and Britain, you've got to get Islam out of Britain, otherwise
Absolutely.
There's going to be violence.
Absolutely.
Because there will be in its fundamental form.
100%.
It will be a completely... I tweeted this yesterday. It would be a completely acceptable opinion to have within the next 2 or 3 years. As Keir Starmer, who actually I do feel sorry for in a way.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. Because I think he got himself into such a bind. He's got two choices.
Mm.
He either addresses the absolute nightmare in the room, which we live in a complete two-tier society, as proved by policeman wanker, for want of a better word, going, we talk to community elders, they tell us everything's fine. If there's a few guys walking around with machetes, then so be
just
it.
Just a few machetes.
You know, it's like, what? Shut up, you crazy lunatic. And then you've got, you've got him describing how they two-tier police us. Mm-hmm. Then you've got, so Keir Starmer can either can face on the problem, which is that we live in a two-tier society, where a guy is getting chucked out of prison for murdering a white kid, a black guy is getting chucked out of prison early so they can throw some white rioters into prison instead. That's two-tier justice system, that's two-tier society. He's got two choices. He either faces down the fact that we live in a two-tier society, a complete two-tier society, as proved by PC prick over there, or he deals with it and faces it down and says, we do have a problem in this society where different communities are policed differently, and you lot, my own people, are absolutely fed up of it, which is causing this rioting. You've got to deal with the causation of the rioting. And on top of that, you've got the bastard taking the knee to BLM in 2020, 2 days before 27 police officers in London were injured alone. Yeah. So you could see what Keir Starmer is doing as inciting those riots, or at least endorsing them.
He's inciting them, but I don't think he sees it. I don't think he can come out and say there is a two-tiered system, because I don't think he recognises that. Mm. Like from day one, the politicians and the mainstream media have been on the same page. The media were blaming EDL, for goodness sake, who've been defunct since 2013. So they're straight away on the, let's blame Tommy Robinson, even though he's been condemning the violence from the beginning. He hasn't condoned any violence at all. But the media looked for a target. So everyone within Keir Starmer's bubble is saying, okay, so the media are saying it's EDL. Let's blame EDL. Let's blame the far right. I don't think he sees that the police are treating us differently, treating ordinary British people differently.
I think the police are ordered to. When people say, look, the police men and women on the street are, I think they are actually ordered to.
Right.
I think they're told that you police one community better, nicer than another, because they're an oppressed minority community and you've got to be really careful and speak to their elders and all that stuff.
Well, he did say, we're going to protect the Muslims, we're going to protect the mosques, we're going to provide more security.
Three English girls get stabbed and you're protecting mosques.
Yes.
It's like, how does that happen?
Elon Musk stood up, didn't he? He said, well, how about protecting all communities? Mm. And then wets like Rory Stewart, like, how dare you jump in this? Like, there's nothing to be offended by.
Armando Iannucci, Alistair Campbell, all of the people.
But saying protect all communities is surely a good thing that all people should be able to get behind.
No, it's an extension of
all
lives matter.
They want preferential treatment for certain demographics.
It's an extension of all lives matter. And I'm really sorry, as I've said before, whilst condemning all violence, there have been violence from both sides. Mm-hmm. So acknowledge that to start with. Don't victim blame.
Yeah.
And also don't cry bully.
Yeah.
There was some cry bullying going on. and acknowledge that it's not, that there are, as you say, there's problems. There are problems.
Yeah, so Jess Phillips was another one, wasn't she? She came out. Oh, the only reason the Mohammedans are out there with their machetes is because there was going to be a far-right demo. And so these people have come out, they've been baited out, and this is the context. Like, no, these people are wrong. Condemn them. Condemn everyone else too, but condemn them as well.
They can't, because they're terrified of them, which takes me to the problem that I have, where I say Islam doesn't work in England. Because if you cannot criticise an ideology, you are denying everyone free speech. Yeah. You're denying. I don't. You know. I've said this before. I object to when people are, you know, say horrible things about God, the one true God. And I don't. But I have to defend their right to do it. I do. I go, if you want to say my God is a useless waste of time and it's pretty petty and I'm going to do some, I'm going to do some crappy cartoons, I'll just go, I don't have much respect for you, but if you want to try and goad me in that way, that's fine. But if you have an ideology that you can't criticise or leave, it's a cult. It's not an ideology. Yeah. So it cannot be commensurate with British values. Yeah. So I say, well, you have to lose the ideology then.
Yeah.
You don't need to take away Muslims. No. You just have to say Islam is the problem.
Yeah.
It's a threat to all of the things that Britain is about, or was about, before we became a socialist state less than a month ago.
But those words you just said will upset a lot of liberals. A lot of liberals who want to see everything as good and everyone as good. And actually, you don't have to go deep into Islam. You don't have to study it for years. You just got to look at the foundation. The very simple foundation of, if Muhammad ever existed, his very words, he said that he thought he was being visited by demons, right? And he married Aisha at 6 years old, consummated the wedding at 9 years old. So we have someone who's admitting to being demonically possessed, admitting to being a paedophile, and a warmonger because he went around killing people who would not convert or revert to Mohammedism. So we have a warmongering paedophile, demon possessed from the very foundation of this ideology. So it's objectively not good. You don't have to go into how they treat gay people or how they treat women or anything that comes from modernity. Look at the very foundation of what this thing is. It's not good. It's objectively not good. So people who are like, well, you can't criticize because it's a foreign faith and it's different.
Yeah.
That they are part of the problem, actually.
Which brings me on to this man who I thought was very brave to say this. Now I'm going to read it because I just thought he was very brave what he said. He's called Sahail Ahmed. He describes himself as a former Islamist turned critic, cultural Muslim.
Okay.
Counter extremism.
I don't trust that, but go on.
I pledge allegiance to king and country and humanity. So he says, I'm just going to stick my head out of the parapet and say the following. It is an inconvenient truth that we Muslims do share some responsibility regarding the way we are perceived by the rest of the world. I actively speak out against Islamic extremism and the problems in the community precisely because I'm worried that hatred of Muslims will intensify. Many Muslims assumed I was a self-hating and totally misrepresented my intentions, but I digress. Returning to the topic at hand, for how long have we nurtured anti-kafir hatred, kafir equals infidel disbeliever, in our midst? For how long have we nurtured anti-British and anti-white sentiment for perceived past colonial wrongs? For how long have we had a superiority complex, thinking ourselves better than the lowly kafir? Kafir equals plural of kafir. For how long have we refused to deal with the extremist in our midst? Instead, we are more concerned about defending Islam so that Islam didn't look bad, even though everyone could see how rife the extremism was. We all knew radical Islam was prevalent in our community, but instead of dealing with the issue, we were more concerned about PR and how we looked as a community, which is ironic because in the long run, it made us look even worse. We did what we always deny our problems to the world, acting dishonestly in the protest process, whether intentionally or unintentionally. I could go on, I barely even scrape the surface. Perhaps discussing this as a potentially inopportune moment in this time is not appropriate, given what is taking place in the UK. Perhaps I should have waited a while longer before I wrote this. Whatever the case might be, the fact remains that once all this settles down, we need to take some time out to self-reflect. It's high time we were honest with ourselves. It is in our interest to tackle these issues and in the process improve ourselves. We need to take some responsibility instead of blaming others for our problems, and we need some change to starting now. Amen.
Well said.
I thought that was a real glimpse of if you, that's a voice, one voice in a million Muslims. So If we had the voices of Muslims like that saying, we have got to be able to criticise our own religion, other people have got to see us criticising our own religion, calling out extremism, calling out this stuff, then people like me wouldn't say this can't exist in Britain. Because we do criticise our religion. Mm-hmm. We spend a lot of time criticising Justin Welby. We spend a lot of time criticising where our church starts to go wrong, and we're free to do so.
Yeah.
That is brave, and I take my hat off to him. And I think if there more Muslims came out and spoke like that, I think Britain has a chance at a glimpse of a brighter future.
Well, could he be elected as one of these community leaders? Could he be an elder? I don't know how it works, but we certainly need more people that are going to call out the nasty behaviour. I don't understand what it means to be a cultural Mohammedan. That's very strange to me, because the culture is toxic in itself.
Well, this, I think it's probably a bit of, it's a bit about like Richard Dawkins saying he's a cultural Christian, so he's not really a Christian. I sent the person who sent his tweet to me, I said, he sounds like an apostate to me. And he said, no, I think he still believes.
Okay.
So I think it's difficult. Anyway, he says former Islamist. So whether he's managed to reform Islam in his own head, who knows?
Sure. But I mean, we've said this many times. We need Pakistani Muslims calling out the Pakistani Muslim rape gangs and stuff. We need these leaders to stop colluding with the police and not asking for extra protection and start speaking out against the evils that are taking place in their communities.
I think it's part of the huge rage is that, you know, you blow up a building and then say, you blow up a concert full of children or tube carriage full of people, and then you say, oh, why are you getting upset with us?
Yeah, you did it's it to like, us well, first kind of thing.
Why aren't you? Yeah, well, that's now the prevalent dialogue on the internet. It's like, this is revenge colonialism. Yeah. I thought you lot were against colonialism.
Right.
So which is it? Because if you're pro-colonialism,
also we didn't colonize
I'm
Arabia.
Happy to go back to the British Empire, which was a bloody good thing, by the way.
Yeah, oh, well, let's do that.
You know, I'm happy to go in into Pakistan and say, by the way, you can't marry your first cousin. It's not good for you.
Yes, that was an interesting thing, wasn't it? Seeing the stats coming out for that. The majority of Pakistanis are inbred, and a large percentage of Mohammedans are inbred. And this might be why there's so much angst and so much violence, because inbreeding breeds fanaticism and violence.
It's common to, it's a BBC study as well, so it's not even, it's well over 50%, I think, of people are marrying their first cousins.
And well, Pakistanis, it's 70%.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
it's degenerate. It's causing mental retardation, which is in, and then we're importing these people into our land and expecting them to all get on with everyone. Of course, that doesn't work. It's a totally different culture.
Do you think these people getting on the boats are getting off the boats of Keir Starmer's new standing army that he keeps talking about?
I don't know.
Do you think we're going to end up being policed by Mohammedans?
No, I think we'll end up where Brits are policed and persecuted. And we're already having people, you know, someone's been arrested for what they've put on Facebook already, for goodness sake. You and I are going to have police knocking on, you already have police knocking on doors, and whereas the Mohammedans are going to get away with everything they've been doing and more.
Well, those two people from the airport kicking, they're out on bail. Like this absolutely, which should not happen. These rioters, condemn them utterly as we do, they're on remand.
Yeah.
They will be convicted in short order, and they will spend a long time in jail. Violent disorder, you get 5 years.
Well, it's good that Two-Tier Keir has taken off as a hashtag and as a name that people are accusing him of, because it means he will constantly hear this. And if he hasn't recognised it yet, he's going to have to at least have some self-reflection.
He's going to be forced to. I think that there are, at least from what I can gather, I mean, I get sent invites to these things all the time. How they can say I've been condoning violence is beyond. Yeah. I wrote a very long post on Friday saying the reason I'm not going to these protests is because they're snap protests and they will get out of hand very, very quickly. But that's not condoning violence.
But it's like we said last week, they can never address the problem, so they focus on the people addressing the problem as the problem. So you are the problem for noticing something. They don't want anyone to notice.
But we are noticing, because our country's falling apart.
Yeah.
And that was the most terrifying speech I've ever heard a British politician deliver.
Absolutely.
Ever.
Absolutely. Same.
And I've never heard something so terrifyingly creepy ever. Yeah. And he needs to get a grip, because I know I'm not just speaking for me.
No.
because she's got these people. When people go out onto the streets, it's because they just go, I've got nothing left. I can't vote my way out of it. Nigel Farage is throwing anyone he can under the bus.
I know. This is what he does to protect himself. You know?
Trying to distance himself from a problem.
But you've been listed in this Times list. We've both been listed in this Five Pillars list. And what this is doing is essentially putting targets on our backs to say to the Mohammedans, these are the people causing problem for your community. Take them out. It's essentially a fatwa.
Yeah. And in your own country, by people who shouldn't be here, who are upset that we are criticising their religion, which we are allowed to do, we've had decades of absolute abject moral cowardice in dealing with this stuff. Where were the police outside Batley Grammar School? Were they going? Disperse now,
indeed,
or we're going to come at you with riot shields.
I'm sick of seeing balaclavaed, masked Mohammedans with machetes and planks of wood in their hand and police standing around, or if they're even present, doing nothing whilst they're attacking. We've seen them go and punch protesters to start a ruckus if they're British. We've seen them arresting 72-year-old women for being British. We've seen them arresting young girls for being British. That this two-tier system cannot go on as it is. People are going to, well, they're going to resort
to... It will break.
Yeah.
And we need to, but a deeper, more fundamental and root cause of this is that we have had built into our national psyche over the 30 years of this cultural Marxist movement, which has crept through everything, through that it's now absolutely crucial and part of our national identity that we hate the white working class of this country. And we actually just hate all white people, but it's really the white working class.
It's white, straight, working class, Christian. All the things that used to be the normative or the predominant in this country, they are the things and the people that are the characteristics that are attacked.
That built this country, that made it beautiful.
Well, no, diversity built this country, didn't it?
No, it didn't actually, Cal. Sorry. And,
that's what they tell me.
James O'Brien can say what the fuck he wants, relentlessly, and just smear everybody else as a racist to try and appease his side. So the thing I've noticed about our side is we're not trying to pander to our side.
No.
All the people I notice who talk about this issue confidently are just expressing an opinion.
Yeah.
That used to be a protected characteristic in this country.
Yeah.
And if we lose free speech, we're not living in a democracy. I've been saying it for 5 years.
That's what a lot of this is coming down to. I think a lot of the reason they're inciting this stuff is because they want to clamp down on our free speech. Good Morning Britain for the last 2 days has covered this. Should social media be banned? And when they say social media, of course they mean X or Twitter, because this is the only platform we have left where we have free speech, as in social media. We've got Rumble for video, but in terms of social media, Twitter's the only one. They want to cancel it because they don't want any dissent. They control Facebook, they control Google, they control YouTube, they don't yet control Elon Musk. And so this is why they're coming for him.
He's come out on our side.
Thankfully.
Absolutely come out on our side, because he's come out and started saying two-tier care. And he's smart. And then you get Ed Davey criticising Elon Musk. I'm like, Ed, you don't even know what a woman is.
I know.
This man is building space rockets to Mars, tunnels under LA, and he's got time to shitpost on Twitter.
And I know. But then you've got Ed Balls interviewing his wife, Yvette Cooper, saying, is your government going to clamp down on social media? And then you've got Conversations Today on there saying, are you going to clamp down on social media? It's the constant repetitive line until the sheep are like, wait, maybe they should clamp down on social media, because that's the problem. That's where all this is starting. It's not.
If they clamp down on social media, they will make this problem 100 times worse.
Of course they will.
Because there are people in Telegram groups. I get sent stuff all the time, and I just don't engage with any of it, despite the fact that I'm apparently one of the main stokers of all of this.
Yeah, you're going to stop stoking stuff, Lawrence.
Yeah. Well, what I want to stoke is a bit of backbone in the British people.
That we've showed time and time again, this is what he does. But for some reason, people still rally to him.
Well, because he's been through a lot. But I don't think he's got that much cultural capital on this stuff, actually. I think he did great on Brexit. Mm. But it's interesting to look at the social media feeds of his fellow MPs, because you can tell that Rupert Lowe is absolutely not towing the Farage party line. And Ticey is developing a bit of a based attitude to the whole thing as well. So I think there's huge amounts of discontent in the Reform camp, because Nigel's just strolled in after all their hard work.
And taken over.
And just gone, it's Nigel's show. Yeah. It's the Nigel show. And it's like, he sits there and goes, I'm not talking to Tommy Robinson. Tommy, bless him, sits there and goes, I will support Nigel whether he hates me or not. That's courage and that's patriotism. And I tell you what, who would you rather be sat in front of Kim Jong-un in an international debate? Nigel Farage or Tommy Robinson? Tommy Robinson, because you know that he would not go, I'm going to appease, I'll throw people to you.
Yeah.
And Nigel's made a dreadful call on that.
And you know what? I won't support Nigel. I think he's a mistake, but I think reform is important. Reform, yeah. I hope, can become democratic and all the other people involved can take some control back so that the members can become members. That's a good thing. And I'm so glad you're going to turn reform back into a party and stand as well. I'm going to stand.
Reclaim, sorry.
All the time.
Everyone does it.
And I know mixed feelings about this, but I've joined UKIP. I'm going to stand in the next election too. I'm like, I'm sick of this. There's no one I could vote for. There's no one I could believe in. I'm going to just do it myself.
Good for you.
So if we all do it, you do it, reform if they can take over it, and I'll stand for UKIP. We'll have different options. I'm sure people can work together in different ways, but we've got to have a voice for the ordinary people.
Well, we should work with each other, as I've been saying constantly.
Yeah, we had a whole program on it on my show.
Yeah, did you?
No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I remember. Yeah. We absolutely should. It's astonishing. So we've got to the end of this. We're coming to the middle of the week. It's Wednesday. There are another 30 demonstrations planned for tonight.
Wow.
So, and this will go out tomorrow night. So we'll have to see what happens. This goes out on Thursday. So we will have to see.
You know what? Carl Benjamin's been a very wise and probably most sensible voice amongst all of us. He's the dad of the group, isn't he? But he keeps saying, someone's going to get hurt. We've all got to be careful. Someone's going to get hurt. And I think he's probably right on this at this point. Someone is going to end up getting hurt. We've got to make sure that whatever you do with your anger and however you protest, do not get violent. Do not resort to violence. That's what they do. We don't do that.
Mm. It's right. And there is no excuse for violence. But the more Keir puts the boot on people's necks, the more he's going to antagonise them towards that, which then leads them down the path of digital currencies, iDigital IDs, the government knowing exactly where your money is and all of that. And we've got something to say about that towards the end of the show. Because we have a new sponsor, which I'll let you know about, and we're very pleased to have them. Where do you think we're headed now? What can this country look forward to with that despotic little traitor, which I do think he's a traitor, I have to say, Keir. I think the Daily Mail is saying, Daily Mail did an article saying Lawrence Fox flees Britain after declaring war on Keir Starmer. It's like, well, no.
You're right here.
I'm right. AM was coming back to Britain from an already arranged trip away to Ireland. And B, I didn't declare war on Keir Starmer. I said, it's war.
Keir Starmer declared war on us.
That's
what happened.
That our lovely friends in the media, they like to misinterpret.
Well, they're part of it. The legacy media are part of the problem. One of the reasons they want to cancel Twitter is because Twitter is now the number one source of news in this country. The legacy media has been dying for a while. We've been talking about it.
Yeah.
Nobody watches TV anymore. Nobody buys newspapers anymore. They go online. They watch our podcast. They watch other podcasts. They go on Twitter. This is what people do now. The legacy media has colluded with the government and colluded with the politicians because they're part of the metropolitan liberal elite establishment bubble, and they are the swamp. They need draining.
They do need draining.
The media no longer holds the powers that be to account. They are part of the powers that be.
That, which is a very dangerous way of having a society operate, where the media are doing what their friends in the government say. I mean, who are they talking to? They're probably talking to 60, 70-year-old people who still have some vague trust in the BBC. Do they realise how quickly that power is about to be dragged away from them? I tried to explain it to Miriam Cates while she was calling for censorship. Conservatives shouldn't call for censorship. No. That's not what Conservatives do.
I didn't see that.
And she was going, you know, that social media is really bad. I'm like, social media is the reason you lost your election. You were booted out because you wouldn't do what social media has now given us a voice, the people, all of us.
Yeah. It's actually true democracy. And when they say we're going to cancel it, we're going to censor to protect our democracy, actually true democracy is the people having a voice. Mm. And that's what social media provides.
It does. So what's going to happen while we're away? Hang on, I've got an idea and I want to ask you what you think.
Okay.
I'm tempted to do 3 entire weeks off social media when I'm in Greece.
Okay,
do you think that, the minute I said that to Peter, who was down last night, he went, but what about your revenue and that money you get for feeding your kids?
Sure, but I think it's good for your well-being.
Mm.
I think it would be amazing if you could do it. It will take a lot of willpower.
I think I could do it. I've done it before. I've done probably at least 3 weeks before, after question time and stuff.
Because it's the thing that holds you back. Like on holiday, like it's time to relax, and Twitter just keeps adding toxicity. It's negative all the time.
So one needs time to think.
Like, yeah, spend some time on the island and relax and write your book, and then come back. And if the country's imploded, we'll find out when we get back.
Maybe we should. Maybe we'll do the week that first week off. Come in. Oh, let the grins come out. This is the grins, like, ha 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 ha, you don't tell me what to do, mate. And what did you think of Ash Sharkar's post, are people of colour safe in the UK?
We're not winning anymore, lads, are we?
What?
We're not winning anymore, lads.
What does that mean?
Well, she said, we're winning, lads, remember? This was her whole thing.
Oh, right, when, yeah.
There was a statistic about immigrants taking over or something, and she was like, we're winning, lads. She tries to put this dichotomy of us versus them, immigrants versus native Brits, which is what if you want a multicultural society, that's not what you want. No. You want everyone coming together. And so she's been part of the problem. Navarra Media, part of the problem.
Hope Not Hate are the government paid for part of the problem.
Hope Not Hate are a communist, corrupt organization. And the fact that they work with the government is a disgrace on the side of the government. It's a great shame on them. But yeah, Navarra Media have been ratioed quite rightly.
Well, I helped that ratio by putting a picture of Lizzie and I up saying, should our women of colour safe anyway in the UK? And I went, so far so good, with a fingers crossed, with a picture of me and Lizzie.
Because it's not a thing about people of colour versus non-people of colour.
It's about different opinions.
Absolutely.
And this is what I hate about racial skin colour-based identity politics. Mm. It's like, so they can't call Lizzie a... they can't go as far as to call Lizzie what do they call what Narinda, that stupid woman, calls people, like coconuts and stuff like that. Yeah. So they just call her a mad woman instead. They call her like thick and stupid, and it's like, that's really genuinely racist. Yeah. You're going, well, if you don't think like us, you're just a stupid brown woman, and it's just that offends me.
I had an update on my case. You know, I've filed a police report against Kehinde Andrews for calling me a coconut, Uncle Tom, coon, house Negro. They said, oh, we're still trying to find out where he is. And I'm like, I literally told you where he works. Like, how is it that the police can find out where you are, knock on your door straight away, but someone attacks me with racist lingo and they did, oh, we don't really know what's going on. It's like the two-tiered policing.
It is two-tiered again. Policing. David Aronovich, it's two-tiered policing. It's not even the two-tiered policing of different skin colours or religions, actually. Mm. It's the two-tiered policing of different ideologies.
It is.
And because wokeism and Islam are so... aligned on some really fundamental things, they're really not aligned on some of the things that the woke people are going to find out pretty soon.
No, because the Mohammedans have been taking advantage of the woke, letting the woke destroy Christendom, letting the woke destroy British values, so that the Mohammedans can step in and take over.
And the first people that are going to get done by the Mohammedans are the woke.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, there are... If England is going to turn into a country, I don't know, what's a sort of... What's an equivalent, you know, a kind of sort of secular westernized Islamic country, would you say? I mean, I suppose Turkey's probably the closest you got to it, but that's a pretty fundamentalist place as well, isn't it? But what Britain is going to look like if this is not face down,
Lebanon or Iran is what it's going to look like.
Mm.
If this country becomes predominantly Islamic, which it looks like it's going to be if the current trends continue.
Yeah. Six kids versus none.
Yeah.
Versus six kids versus 226,000
machetes versus no machetes, weapons versus no weapons.
So
the greatest mistake we ever made was allowing them to take our guns over one horrible catastrophe. We, without our First and Second Amendments, without what America has, we have nothing. We're an unprotected people.
We are, and it's
we have no freedom.
There was that Ben Shapiro thing with Piers Morgan when he, and even I found it a bit ludicrous, where Ben Shapiro's defending the First and Second Amendment. He said, I'm scared against future government tyranny. And I was like, well, come on, Ben. And then, ta-da, future government tyranny arrives. Yeah. I think Keir Starmer is a despot, and I think he's frightened, which is, there's nothing worse than
a weak leader.
Insecure despot.
Yeah.
So have we got anything positive we can... send out to the universe.
We're going on holiday.
I've also started, you know, you were saying that I need to spend some more time with the Bible. I've now started, I put aside every day.
I noticed you've got your rosary on you as well.
I've got my rosary on. I love that. I feel like I need it. That's why.
Yes.
Regular
time with the Bible, regular time with scriptures, and regular time in prayer is exactly what we need
right
now, all of us. I think, who was it who put out, it was King Bo, put out this tweet that says, if you're protesting, great, but also go to church on Sunday. It's not enough to just be in action. You've got to also be in prayer. The two things come together.
I think that's really wise. And I do think it's time for people to find, even if you struggle to find your faith, look for it because it's there.
I've had so many DMs over the last few days of people who are refinding their faith.
Good.
So, yeah, God works good out of the bad every single time. He takes bad situations and uses it for good. And I think that's what we're seeing. If we want to remain a good country, we have to remain a Christian country. And people are finding Christ again because there's so much darkness and there's so much Muhammad around.
Amen. And our thoughts are always with those families of those children, because that must be, and those that know them, because it must be absolutely unbearable. And to those that say it's been politicized, it's like, it is political. I'm sorry. The constant and unending murder of our young people is a political issue over the forms of immigration and uncontrolled immigration that we're allowing into this country. So it is a political issue. And I think it's absolutely disingenuous to say that we're not allowed to talk about it.
And we are, at the same time, we are praying for them. We're praying for the repose of their souls. May light perpetual shine upon them. But we also need action. We also need politics to change.
We do. We need politics to change. Well, I think we managed to get through it without slandering anyone too badly. And I am so looking forward to spending a chill week with you. You are the most fun to have on holiday, other than the kids, which will be amazing. And we'll be there. Same deck chair. And we'll do a Fox and Father. We'll do a Skiathos special, Fox and Father.
Fox and Father on the island.
On the island. after a couple of sundowners. Yeah, it'll be quite nice.
That'll be nice.
I'm really looking forward to it. I love you, buddy.
You too, brother.
And we will see you next week, probably. But then we're going to have a small gap during August. And we'll be back at the very beginning of September. So there'll be this one. And then, obviously, if anything massively kicks off, we may need to have a Zoom conversation maybe just for my own personal sake. Amazing that Margit would refuse to have a Zoom conversation.
Funny that, isn't it?
You know, meet me here. This is how frightened I am
factors.
Of being labelled by these people as the enemy of them. Mm. I don't like to know, you meet me here at this time and it's arranged. No. I'm like, no.
Why should you?
I don't want what I do to be predictable at all.
No.
I don't want people to know that where I am.
No.
I don't. Because I'm scared of my living in my own country. Thank God I moved out to that beautiful paradise.
This is what the Americans have been asking me this week. Like, I'm not afraid, but I am cautious that either the government's going to come for me or the Mohammedans are going to come for me. Yeah, I feel threatened on both sides, and I'm sure you're the same. Like, we shouldn't feel like that just from speaking the truth and living in our own country.
Now, as we come to the end of the show, I did promise you that we had a new sponsor.
Yes.
Sponsoring the Fox and Father show, because apparently this company, Gold Bullion Partners, a few of our listeners have decided that while being faced with the tyranny of potential digital IDs and CBDCs and where they can keep their money safely without it being removed from the government, they have come up with the idea of gold. Well, this is actually silver.
Well, I've got some gold.
I've got some gold too! but my gold's a little one.
Well, so, the problem is your money isn't yours if it's in the bank, and you can't rely on it, you can't trust the banks. So we've got to invest in assets.
No capital gains tax.
That's interesting.
No capital gains tax.
I've got a lot of friends who are buying gold and silver, actually.
Yeah, non-traceable. I'm buying silver because gold's a bit up there for me at the moment. I could probably get one of these. But this is legal tender.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You could.
I wouldn't want to spend it though.
No, I'm just saying.
A lot of places aren't accepting legal tender anymore, and that's part of the problem. That the more we go to a cashless society, the more the government can control everything that we do. They can see every penny we spend. They can control where we spend it. That's not a good thing.
But gold and silver are holding their values beautifully in the world, and in times of trouble, people tend to lean and go towards gold and silver. So, you know. Gold Bullion Partners, guys. The link will be in the in the show notes. And if you so feel that you want to...
Absolutely. Do your own research. Look into it.
Yeah. And we will carry on buying it ourselves, won't we?
Yeah, we will.
Anyway, so there you are. And have a wonderful, wonderful beginning, middle of the summer holidays. It's going to be the beginning for me because I get my kids back today. Whoopee. And... we love you all and we appreciate you all. And the message is love and peace. And the message is strength in confidence, in critical thinking, and in the fact that this country was built around values which you are much bigger and greater than ours, and the experiment being done on us is sinful and wrong. God bless you all.
God bless.